Steve Worden,
Farnham Hill.
Episode 33. Hello and welcome to A Cider Chat. My name is Aria Windcaller, and I am your A Cider MC for this weekly podcast where we speak with cider makers and enthusiasts from around the world. I'd like to thank Dave White of Whitewood Cider, who I pulled in, most likely unexpectedly for him, to do the intro to Steve Wood and the Farnham Hill team. We'll be speaking to Steve, Nicole Lebon, Louisa Spencer, Ryan Bishop, and Wanda Loyne, giving you a behind-the-scenes glimpse of their tasting at what I like to call an American heritage cidery. More on that chat in a moment. I really like thanking people who go out of their way to take the time to put in a review and rating to iTunes. And I happen to see that Super Connected left a 5-star rating for Cider Chat and wrote the following. Thank you, Rhea, for doing such excellent interviews, and thanks to all the interviewees willing to share so much information about their ciders with everyone. Well, Super Connected, you are awesome for taking that time. Not only that, a 5-star rating, woo-woo, that is the best, and it really helps propel this podcast out to everyone. I mean, there's like 3 billion listeners on iTunes who are hooked in somehow, some way to that giant Apple, and this is one way that lets folks know that there is something called cider. It's the cousin that beer and wine forgot about somehow, and it is rising to the top. So thank you for doing that, and anyone else who would like to do that, I would really, really dig it. It so helps our cider agenda, promotes it out there into the world. And we all know that is so very, very, did I say very yet? Very important in Ciderville. Now, I want to get back to someone who wrote to me last week. That's James up in Vermont. He had seen my flyer that I put at the co-op. I think it was a Hunger Mountain co-op in Montpelier, Vermont. And I've gotten a number of emails from James. So thank you very much, buddy, for taking the time to get back to me. I asked James if he had another name for sweet cider, what I call sweet cider. And then cider being the fermented piece. And the one thing he sent back was, I believe this is for sweet cider, is to call it fresh apple cider. I don't know how that's going to work, you know. It kind of keeps it a little confusing. And then I heard from Hugh McKellar at Real Cider Reviews. Hugh is a blogger who writes out of Australia. And he put out on Twitter, you know, the same thing, that sweet cider doesn't work. So we are just going all over the map with nomenclature. And I think it's freaking awesome that these conversations are happening, that we're trying to figure it out and finding the correct name. Do recall, those of us who can remember, that in craft beer, originally it was called microbrew. That was the label that was everywhere. And now that is kind of barely never used, and it's just craft beer. So let's just ride this tide and keep on talking it up and getting people even aware of it. That's what it's all about. And in the end, if the cider's good, people are going to drink it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, a couple other things that James wrote, I thought this was kind of interesting. It gave a little bit of his history that I thought would be really cool to share with you. And he wrote, I spent most of my high school years, that was 1954 through 1958, in Hefford. My high school, this is in the UK, my high school was around the corner from Bulmer's Cider Apple Storage Yard. I recall once, and he writes, I'm not sure why, spending at least one night in a room which directly overlooked tons of ruby red and green apples waiting to be pressed. The smell was exotic, 3 times in a row. Fermented cider, which he calls Scrumpy, was a British teenager's entry point into the world of intoxication. It was served in pints in the local pub and off-license shops in half gallons for home consumptions. I think that's pretty interesting. And as an aside, I don't ever recall having to buy apples, as we were surrounded by orchards over which we boys used to climb their fences and feast on ground falls. What a lovely imagery. And of course, I don't really promote teenage intoxication. I don't think anybody does, but that's part of his history. And then James did kind of go on talking about my website, ciderchat.com, and oh my goodness, what he wrote was, it was kind of hilarious, but a little sad too. He goes, to put it bluntly, the design of the website is not terribly functional. Sorry, I don't mean it that way. He said it was hard to get the podcasts and that there's no list. Well, James and anyone else out there in Ciderville, you know, I'm doing the best I can with what I got. And I did list the podcasts. There's like an archive, and if you go to the page that says podcast, on the top is always the newest episode that is airing that week, and then you just scroll down, and there's beginning with episode zero, because that's what podcasters do. They begin with episode zero, and then down to one, two, and all the way up to where we are now, 33. You could just scroll down, see a primary photo, and a link to that chat. So there is that piece, and I know sometimes it's a little hard to maneuver, and as we keep on going up in Ciderville, we'll get to it and try to do the best we can. And he recommended that I put that out to anybody in Ciderville who's really good at website design to help me out. Love that. So there you go. I put it out. Thank you, James, for writing, staying in touch, joining the Facebook page, and being who you are out there in the world, and joining a cider community when you don't even drink fermented apple juice. That's pretty fantastic, don't you think? Because this is just another way to keep the conversation going and keeping cider going up. And I'd also like to mention that I will be at Pour the Core on June 11th in Brooklyn, New York. There's two sessions. I think the first one starts at 12, and then there's an afternoon session. I plan on being at both. I've already scheduled a chat with Danielle at Big Apple Cider. So that's going to be really cool. And I look forward to speaking to you if you're going to be at Pour the Core. And if you want to follow my little escapades around the city as I get my city legs back in shape, which, you know, it's been a while since I've been in New York. I love going there. Always, always, always. I should be probably doing a little Periscope as I can, and certainly putting it out on Twitter at Cider Chat. Hope you can make it. Looks like there's some great ciders to be had. And if you want to meet up with me, let me know. Let's do a cider meetup. I'm planning on just doing that at Pour the Core at this point, and might be popping that out too at some other places. So stay in touch. Now let's move on to this chat. Again, this is part two. Last week was episode 32, and we were sitting up on top of the apple orchard on milk crates, myself with Steve Wood and Nicole LeBon. Well, we're going to be heading to that too, but first I want to take you into the tasting early in the morning, because I spent a full day at Farnham Hill. This was pre-recorded in April. It was a lovely day, just picture perfect, and the narrative will tell you the story in and of itself. I was really excited to do this as a two-part series because we got a bit of time to spend with Louisa Spencer. And Louisa is Steve's wife, and she is also the proprietor of Farnham Hill Ciders. She is a dynamo. I really, really enjoyed speaking with her and hearing her speak her mind. If there is anyone who's cider bold, it is this gal. A lot of food for thought here in this chat. So without further ado, let's all grab a glass and join this chat with the folks at Farnham Hill Cider. We begin with Steve Wood, who founded Farnham Hill along with Louisa Spencer, explaining how they conduct the tasting that takes place 3 to 4 times weekly at Farnham Hill Ciders.
Try to do a completely objective and descriptive tasting, calling on our olfactory experience.
Mid-sentence, the furnace came on, but Steve was able to prevail until it shut off, and he kept on explaining this sensory experience at the tasting.
And the trick is to just empty your mind, and if you smell bubblegum, dog shit, peaches, and a pond, and apple pie, you just say that. There is a point at which we start saying, okay, we don't want that, we do want this, and where did that come from, and where did this come from? But while we're tasting, we're mostly just trying to describe everything. And so we look at it, and we don't write down anything about appearance unless it looked weird. And so everything is nose, taste, feel, finish. That is, how does it smell? How does it taste? But how does it taste? There's some tasters who just do the sweet, sour, salt, bitter, umami, the things that your tongue can actually do. We do the whole, like, whatever it tastes like. Feel is the physical sensations, which are mostly astringency and fullness, but viscosity. And then finish, just how does it end? But all with just descriptive, trying to stick with description and not with expressions of pleasure or displeasure. And we also, I mean, there are times when we nail something and we all, you know, start looking all weepy and happy, you know, whatever. I mean, you can't really.
Oh, I hope that moment comes. Yeah. Oh, I hope that moment comes.
Well, we can really pick it up. Actually, we were practicing before we got here, so I think we
And do we get to know what the blend is, or is that let it go?
Nope. Yep.
So this is what we always do, too. We always rinse out the glasses first with the sample of what we're tasting so that the smell of the glass or the previous sample or whatever doesn't interfere.
Do you say cheers ever?
No.
I'm so excited to be here.
Well, get over it right now. This is an epic drag, okay? We have to do so much of it. Just get down.
Who's that?
Who's the cheerful person?
The Farnham Hill team meets at least 3 to 4 times a week for this descriptive tasting of their ciders. Today, we begin in the morning, a little after 11 a.m. We're in a large room with a huge insulated door that makes easy access to the outside. There are large stainless steel tanks tucked into the back corner of the room. The floor is cement, and the ceiling is plywood. Everything about this space screams New England utilitarian. We gather around a wooden plywood table that sits in the center of the room. Nicole is a note taker. There's a pile of filled notepads in front of her already. In all, there are 6 people, including myself. Louisa, who is sitting off of Nicole's left shoulder, a little bit higher on a green table. Juana Loins takes a seat on a milk crate to the right of Nicole, and Ryan Bishop is sitting high up on a stool. Soon he'll be grabbing each beaker of cider to pour for us. Steve Wood is a little bit further out from the main group, leaning back in an old office chair. His feet are outstretched, his arms are crossed, and he's holding a wine glass. We're to taste 7 ciders this morning. Each cider sits in front of Nicole in a clear glass beaker. First, we rinse our classic wine glasses with the cider to be tasted, and then our sample is poured in by Ryan. Once the sipping begins, the descriptors start flying. Ryan pipes up first, followed by Louisa, then Steve. Everyone is joining in on this tasting.
I think that acid's further ahead than the ones in the last one.
I agree with that. But I think the bitter is also like citrus peels and citrus. Lemon zest.
Okay, I found
it is, but without the zing.
Like, but it booms after the spit.
But it's not.
Yeah.
It doesn't boom when
without
your mouth is full.
The of it. I have one annoying.
That doesn't.
No, that's
your mouth is full, Nicole.
You don't have to say that.
It be, what I'm trying to say is that it rises like crazy after the spit.
No, you're right. Yeah, I agree. Mm. Quinine, did you say quinine? Yeah, yeah. Agree.
I've got some kind of like mixed mango juice drink that maybe is in like a soft serve or something.
Yeah, it seems to me that the fruits are very dilute in this one, and the acid and the, what bitter there is are tightly pressed together, and there's very little room for fruity fun. But I like it, you know. And whoever said something about spring water, I think is a bit of that there.
Finish is
like
sweet.
The best glass of water you ever had in your life.
It's sweet.
The finish?
I guess
somebody else said that. I'll try again, but
I can't fleshy taste of black olive.
Well, it's in the
black
taste.
Olive?
Black olives, yeah. You have like, it's good like that. Yeah, it's very
inside fleshy taste.
Yeah, I know. I'm writing inside fleshy.
The skin is not like once you bite through, you get like the inside of that flesh is.
I got the sweetness
black
we're talking about, but boy, you have to be looking for sweetness.
I can't pick out the nut I'm getting finished with something.
No,
walnut.
Nut.
The sweetness
nut.
Brazil nut or cashew?
Name is Steve Wood.
Brazil nut.
One of those.
That's the most sort of
slightly
just
sweet
nut there is.
Right, it's not a nut.
It's nut you don't.
I don't care that it's not a nut.
What
it's
Brazil nuts are nuts?
It's a nut.
Nuts are all nuts are seeds.
Nuts are seeds.
It's a nut.
Nuts are seeds.
Peanuts weren't nuts. Brazil nuts aren't nuts.
I don't think so.
What
is a nut?
A peanut's not even a seed.
It's a legume.
I thought nuts were seeds.
Peanuts are legume.
Right, yes, they are. So are beans, and they are seeds. So don't start with me. But but what I want to know is
debate for another time.
What? Okay, yeah.
No, I want to see you take down Ryan.
It's all done.
I already
Google. Is a Brazil nut a nut?
Ask Wikipedia.
Did you say Brazil nut?
No, it's a. This is the salon where you can get a Brazilian. Here's what it looks like.
Okay, work.
The descriptive tasting goes on for an hour today, and so does the laughter and the ribbing. It's part and parcel of Farnham Hill's team, as it is every orchardist, farmer, and team that works in the soil and in the cidery. I'm part fly on the wall, gawking spectator, and comrade in cider. By the way, Brazil nuts are seeds from a fruit tree called the Brazil nut. It's a large tree that reaches 160 feet or 50 meters. And the trunk is 1 to 2 meters or 3 to 6.6 feet in diameter. It's among the largest trees in the Amazon rainforest, and many may live for 500 years or more. According to some authorities, often they can reach the age of 1,000 years. The stem is straight and commonly without branches for well over half the tree's height, with a large emergent crown of long branches above the surrounding canopy of other trees. Thank you, Wikipedia. Once the tasting is done, it's break time. In 30 minutes, Steve Wood and Nicole Laban and I will walk to the top of the orchard and sit upon 3 milk crates and chat. We're going to head right up to that hill again and finish off where we did on episode 32 last week with Nicole Laban and Steve Wood, speaking on terroir.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the terroir because
sure.
I know
serious.
Yeah, that's something to also kind of going towards the market that why isn't that already happening? I mean, can one be brave enough to say, you know, hell yeah, this is like New Hampshire terroir right here.
Well, it is though. It doesn't really, I mean,
it matters
see,
to the consumer.
There are a whole lot of things that, well, it matters to some consumers. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to sell. It doesn't mean that there's a business in it. You know, it's taken wine thousands of years, not thousands of years, hundreds of years. I mean, the bloody Cistercians started fiddling around with Pinot in Burgundy in like the 12th century, right? They've taken a long time to figure out how to make really good Burgundy. And Fair enough. It's, you know, been quite a few hundred years since people accepted that as one of the best wines in the world. But still, we're just making cider, and the cider market is developing the way it's developing. And the hot stuff at the moment is six packs with jalapenos and agave or whatever. We don't even know how to play that game. We don't know. We're not part of that. Don't disdain it. I mean, there are people making some, you know, lovely drinks that are based on apples or whatever. But they don't have anything resembling terroir. Terroir is real. I mean, with everything. Every patch of ground imposes conditions on what can be grown well there and what can't. Whether we're talking about potatoes or kumquats or apples or whatever, right? Pine trees. Mm-hmm. And we've had the great good luck to have some land that produces some brilliant apples of certain sorts, and the luck and developed skill to be able to at least figure out some of the sorts that grow well there, and develop skill to learn how to actually do that. We know it translates to being written up in, you know, the foodie mags, or getting on the front page of the food section of the Times or whatever. Or people going all weak at the knees sometimes when we walk into the bloody room because we're such geniuses. But first of all, we're not geniuses. And second of all, we're not making any money in this, right? I mean, and so we're a little, I mean, it's not exactly relaxed, but we wouldn't be shocked to find that there is no business in this. We're going to keep plugging at it, and I think it's probably fair to say that we'll go find something else to do rather than start putting chipotle in the cider. Is that reasonable?
Probably. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, Steve also always talks about how, you know, he's going to be walking around with two sticks when he's, you know, 95 or whatever. He's a farmer, so that's probably true. And so all of us that are here sort of presume that we are going to keep going with this, and you know, maybe
there's nobody looking forward to retirement here.
Right. We all like what we're doing too. Yeah. And so we hope it all works out. You know, and part of it might be the maturation of the industry. I mean, you know,
yep.
Jalapeno and other weird flavors are sort of exciting.
Yeah, they can be cool too. That's the other thing. We are not disdainful of that. I mean, if somebody wants to make an apricot jalapeno cider and it's balanced and it's a nice drink and it's made out of concentrate from China, I don't care. Why is that skin off our necks?
Right, isn't any, but at the same time, you're not going to get terroir out of that because if you're, you know, if you're looking for a market that supports the idea of terroir, you have to be looking at what the base cider is rather than what's going in on top of it.
Right. So why would you go for that though? If you're sitting at a restaurant and you're a regular person in a nice restaurant, which means that you're on a nice night out and you don't get very many of them. And you can order a bottle of wine off the list. It's absolutely, you know, it's going to be a nice bottle of wine. Or you can take a flyer on cider, and you've had three or four disappointing ciders, maybe even, or maybe you haven't ever had any, or you've had some six-pack cider, and you can't quite make the jump in your mind, but you're out there with your sweetie pie for your night out. Get a bottle of red. Get some cheap Tempranillo. Don't bloody buy a bottle of cider. The risk is too high. The cider that's sitting there in front of you may be way more fun than the bottle of regular old Tempranillo Planc, but you're not going to be the one to pull the cork out of it or have that cork pulled on your behalf. There's a clear market to the six-pack stuff, and I think probably there's a clear shakeout coming up, the shakedown, whatever you want to call it. There's going to be a... Not everybody who's in business making cider right now is going to be in business in 3 years making cider. I think we'll still be in business, but I don't see the clear route. It actually takes people like us who are doing something else, but who take pleasure from the same things, saying on the moment, oh, I'll try that, I'll have that. Why would you give $16 for a bottle of cider when you can get a six-pack of cider for $9? Or you can get a perfectly sound bottle of Cote d'Iran for $16. Why bother with this? Why risk the cider?
I think people are risking that because there's a history to it. And I don't want you to sell yourself short. There's a little bit of my heart that's kind of going, what? 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 And I think I just kind of want to call out that we're sitting in New England, and when I'm talking to a New England farmer here.
Yeah, you are.
And that is the style of that, to be kind of, you know, hard scrabble, and maybe we don't have enough sunny days year round. You know, if we were in California, it'd be different.
Right?
This is like classic.
Right. We'd be vapid bucolic. Sorry, Nicole. Nicole from me is from California. So.
And my family is too.
So. All right. But, okay, so you guys go make beautiful music.
Right.
But
you know, it's part of the terroir is, you know, what happens in the ground, but it's also what happens on the ground, outside of the ground, like with the cider makers themselves. And
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
I think the terroir is the place.
In the ground?
Period.
Just replace the soil?
It's the air that's blowing over us. It's the ground under those trees. What we do is just human intervention on the great good luck of having a place. And the place is the place. And it doesn't matter that what the human does with the place is up to the human, but the terroir is what the word means. It's
earth.
It's the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's the place. It's the earth and all the things that go on with it.
Mm.
I mean, it might be that tickety, but you know, it might be any of the birds that are flying over it, or the worms that are crawling through it, or that, you know, that mason bee that's flying around over there. What we do is what we do. We aren't terroir, we're humans. We're the manipulators of this entire planet. Sometimes, or maybe not such good things, occasionally with luck, for good things. But what we do with this is us. And we aren't, that dirt is under my fingernails, but I am not part of it. It has independent existence. It'll be there long after I'm gone. And it's going to change a lot less than I am. I'm just going to turn into part of it, right?
Well, Ciderville, I suspect you are enjoying this chat as much as I. What a treat for me to be able to discuss with Steve Wood Terroir and get his strong opinion on it. That is what I so dig about this opportunity here, both in the podcast in general and specifically at Farnham Hill. It's a golden opportunity for us to wrangle and wrestle with some of these concepts, and it ain't over yet. Next, we're going to delve into the cider market. And then soon, Nicole will have to head off, and in comes Louisa Spencer. So hang on to that glass as we join this chat at Farnham Hill Ciders in Lebanon, New Hampshire.
I do want to talk about that market piece. I know. That's why it'd be nice to have Louisa here.
Here's the market piece. The market piece is, this was a good idea. And we've had a fairly large hand in getting all this stuff started. And that's cool. Right? I'm not taking credit for starting the cider industry or whatever, but we've been at this. It's true. We've been at this longer than most people. And we've been at it from the sort of, you know, as Keith, the joke is ground up, right? I mean, we actually do grow apple trees. And there's nothing distressing about that. It's all cool. The fact that the industry in this explosion of cider, which we never anticipated when we were just treading up and down the streets of New York trying to find a wine guy to take it seriously or whatever. We never anticipated that all this stuff would happen. I mean, what we found very early on was that here is illustration. Our first account, our first serious accounts in New York were serious wine accounts. Our first restaurant was Gramercy Tavern. I think our second restaurant was Kraft. We got into all these very, very sharp, smart restaurants whose sommeliers, the Psalms, loved this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not a market make. We couldn't get into the corner bar and grill. We couldn't get it down the throats of regular people just having... I mean, the price was the price of, as I say, it was the price of Red Planck. It was the price of Cote de Rhone, as it remains now. But, you know, it's cider. And we have not... succeeded in making the shift into the sort of, into getting it down regular people's throats and getting it included as one of the regular pleasures of life. I mean, Louisa has said, people have been asking, oh, you know, what's your vision? What's your vision? What's your vision? And Lulu, I mean, you say it. You'll say it more clearer than...
Well, from the outset, we didn't want to be trendy, and we didn't want to do jello wrestling and all the things you have to do. I mean, you know. But so the thought was to just to get it to where it would be one of the staples that any good host would have to have. You have to have a decent beer, decent red, decent white, decent cider.
Make it
for table use, you know. And I think, actually, sometimes I yearn for more regulation, because it would be nice if every state had distinct regs for cider. One of the most difficult things about New York is it's not classified as a wine or a beer, so it goes into both kinds of stores. And in New Jersey, everything goes together. But, you know, sometimes I wish it was classified rigidly as a wine, so it would stand next to wine and we wouldn't get into this thing with the six packs and the idea that cider is gluten-free beer.
But that's never going to happen now that this is
No, I know,
place.
But it's a hypothetical. The point is that the mental landscape is so confusing through nobody's fault that it has you kind of wishing for things that so far aren't happening. But, you know, all we can do is keep plugging away. My great hope for it, in a way, is that the landscape, at least as far as the orchard ciders goes, becomes more Europeanized and the local markets get deeper. So most of us are shipping our stuff less far, and people come to regard their own landscape as prime cider land. So drink more of it, and everybody, you know, makes more money and puts less exhaust in the air. But that's a long-range hope. And meanwhile, I don't completely hate the idea of people having tiny cideries in their garage, you know, and selling to their neighbors within a radius of 5 miles, because an awful lot of people would learn an awful lot about cider that way. And there's quite a few. I think a lot of those attendees at the USAMC, ACM, conference are kind of thinking along those lines, which I think that'd be kind of cool, unless they're going to go crazy with cloves and...
I mean, we've seen, like, you know, just at CiderCon in Portland this year, there was over, like, 1,000 attendees.
Yeah.
So certainly you've seen that, where you're, you know, stomping the street and the pavement trying to say, hey, look at this, a bottle of cider. And now we're... folks kind of say, oh, yeah, I've heard about that.
But if you look at who those attendees were, and two things. One is what ciders they're making. And the second is how many of them haven't even started a cidery yet. There were a huge number of people there, percentage of people there, who were, and it's true the year before, who were there because they're about to start making cider. And if you look at what the growth in cider, I mean, it's true that the Sam Adams cider, you know, Angry Orchard, is way out ahead of everybody else. Their growth has slowed a bit, but the growth at the moment is in flavored ciders. Right. That has nothing to do with people who are making fine orchard-based ciders. It does, except that, as we've always said, you know, to the extent that these folks are introducing people to the notion of pleasurable, lightish alcoholic drinks from an apple at all, they're still doing us a favor. It's becoming a somewhat more distant favor as the levels of chipotle and agave rise, and maple and whatever. I mean, the difficulty now is that there are two subcategories. And the category that's really exploding, that's being thought of as cider, which is the word we've been trying to revive for 20 years, or rather bring back to its true, being understand to mean what it means. Real stuff is kind of left by the wayside for the moment. If the real stuff, meaning to say, I'm not saying the other things aren't real, the cider that is made with attention to the fruit and where the fruit comes from and how the fruit's grown and what the actual characteristics of the fruit are conferred by the land and the hands of the grower and all the rest of that stuff. That cider doesn't really have a place right now. The marketplace that Louisa was describing, you can't ask a retailer who has an endless supply of cans, and he's got this new category, and you say, well, you know, over in your wine section, you ought to have a shelf for the other ciders. Cider to most people is a new thing. It is those cans. It is not what we make. And I'm not trying to suggest, I don't think any of us is trying to suggest that that's never going to happen. It just isn't what's happening right now. And we're not inclined to jump in any particular direction to try to get a piece of everything that's happening now. We're just sort of hunkering down and watching and trying to keep working and making better cider and hoping that... Keep up what sales we have.
I see. I've been writing about libations for many years now, and I've been writing about the craft beer, wine, and cider.
Yeah.
And you know, I keep on going back to what I've seen with craft beer, because you have that same kind of product differential in beer that you do with cider. And the same thing has happened with craft beer. You know, when I first started writing about it in my area, I could count the number of breweries on my hand. Now I don't even try. And what I've noticed initially, that there was an upswell for the really big beers, the highest ABV, the most exotic. There was an extreme beer fest. And now there is, and this isn't just coming from, you know, the older drinker who doesn't really want that high ABV, that sessionable beer, that one that could really define the brewery, and they could, you know, work that.
That's a relief. This has happened three times, though, in the beer guys, with the beer guys. We're in the middle of the third. I mean, craft beer's gone ba-deesh, ba-deesh, ba-deesh.
But it hasn't crashed.
I think a lot of, actually, the beer wars have gotten down to design and witty promotion.
That's right.
An injection of humor seems to have to come with every new label so that the people drinking it can feel like they're
clever.
Funny guys. That's a really, really sophisticated game for which you have to pay serious dough, which we're not, you know, being on an annual crop schedule, we're not even in that arena. Another phrase I wish people would pick up is table cider. I mean, our stuff is table cider. You know, it will allow you to get up and walk away from your dinner or even your lunch with a future, and without going, you know, straight to bed. And it helps your food to taste good, and it makes you feel, it makes you feel sociable without making you stupid, and it's just got every advantage.
And it doesn't require a lot of chatter. I mean, all that stuff that you were just a party to about intensely trying to analyze the cider, that is not part of our marketing. We don't want people to talk like that. We don't want to join the bottles of wine that ruined dinner parties by making the whole conversation about themselves. All that describing that we do is so that we can work with each other to try to figure out how to do stuff. We don't want people talking about peach and apricot and all the rest of the stuff when they're drinking. We want them, the first thing they say after, oh, that's very nice, thank you very much, the next thing we want them to say about the cider is, oh my goodness, that bottle's empty, shall we get another? You know, it's not, as Louisa says, it's just to be a regular old staple, the source of plain pleasure would be a great pleasure to us.
Yeah, part of our problem is that our distributor in New York says bitterly, people see it as a special occasion cider, and we go, as though they have to save it their anniversary.
God.
Well, that is not movement.
No. We give people bottles of cider.
What are you talking about? It's $13. Right. Drink it. Come on already.
I tell you, when I hand somebody a bottle of cider, I now say, look, you can have this cider only if you'll take it home and drink it. You know, and you can pour it down the drain, but for Christ's sake, don't save it for your kid's graduation in 4 years' time. Long ago, the joke of winemakers is, picnic. You know, this would be a great wine for a picnic. how many bloody picnics did you go on last year? Right? Zero. So that means is this doesn't get drunk.
And I think it's part that this problem is partly it's part of the mental landscape of packaging, because the sort of ciders that people feel are casual are have got jiggier labels and a jiggier image, and ours is just quiet, so it can sit anywhere. But that now strikes people as being sort of time to tense up and put a white tablecloth down, which is just, you know, whereas with wine bottles, it's not like that. Mm-hmm. There are some of them are dignified and reserved, and some of them aren't, but people don't get wound up about that.
That's what happens with brandy. I mean, the importers are bringing beer from overseas, bringing here. They're telling exactly what they want on those labels, so it'll sell. Yeah. So, you know, that's a piece. You have to be one part farmer and one part brander.
Yeah,
And, Louisa, you were mentioning earlier, you know, I don't know what that is that's going to get us kind of going.
I know.
And I think I want to kind of give Ciderville out there some hope.
Cider space. Look,
there's total hope. I mean, look, you see we've got a foundation in the ground for a building down there.
I do, a big one.
The harrowing you hear over there is our taking out an orchard to replant it to more cider fruit. We're acting. I mean, we believe this is all going to work out. We think there's a wonderful future in all of this. But we are trying very hard not to kid ourselves about what the present presents. And it doesn't present any clarity about the sort of thing we're doing. It doesn't mean not to keep going. It just means...
But doesn't that seem like a more recent thing in terms of, you know, I'll take it from that approach as a writer, that I've really seen that, like, switch on towards cider. Certainly everybody's, like, looking at 2015, and it's, like, in the news, and, of course, we have this Cider Chat podcast.
Right.
And so its time has come, and it's kind of like... holy shit, the time has come. We're like, here we are. What the hell are we going to do?
Yeah.
Well, how do we meet that?
Sure. We're in that boat, except the thing is that I think this is actually very good luck that we've had a couple of setbacks with buildings and various other things that have caused us to pause for a second. We were thinking pretty hard. I'm not saying we're rejecting the notion now, but we were thinking pretty hard about kegs and cans. I mean, just looking at the way the industry was shifting.
Yeah.
And there was one little piece of information that can be off by a lot, but you know that you know how the cider industry's grown in sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 60%, 60%, 80%, 80%. It's down to 12 or something this last year. Everybody's crying about it being down to 12, which is a growth rate that any other industry would go weak at the knees for. But the number of brands
in New York State.
New York State went up by nearly 1,000%.
Not originating there, but in the market.
In the market. Yeah. So what that means is there's this flood of labels out there.
And they're not going to pick up drinkers as fast.
And this is not a swamp that we want to step into. So I'm very glad that we had reason to say, wait a sec. You know, I mean, there were various other things that pushed our hands back, but once our heads got back and we looked at it again, we thought, don't go chasing that stuff right now. Let's just see how it goes.
Right.
Let's, you know, keep, I mean, building our building, build agility, keep trying to make better cider, grow another crop of apples, try to do a really good job and get lucky on the next crop of apples and like that.
Speaking of that, have you talked about the different degree of ripeness in general? Well, talk about that, because that's going to be really interesting as cider apples get to be a thing, and the number of growers, the number of growers selling their surplus grocery fruit to cider makers. Fact is, what you grow for the grocery store is not as rich and ripe and sugary and just out of condition, as the grocers would say, as what you want for cider.
So what we grow for the grocery store isn't. I mean,
what anyone grows for the grocery store. even the grocery store growers, the big growers who are now putting in cider varieties, are going to have a terribly hard time reconditioning their habits to let stuff drop. Oh my God, you know? Mm-hmm. And all the, and they may not do it. They may just run their pickers through all the blocks to
That's
say.
What they plant, most of them.
Well, okay, yeah. But this is a, something to watch out for. Mm-hmm. And somebody like mm-hmm. you actually mm-hmm. appreciates the importance of this mm-hmm. Because a lot of people are going to say, oh, we've got, you know, we've got
Dabinet and Yarlington
Mill. But if they're, right. if they're picked before they are really soft sure. or even drop, they aren't what they should be.
Okay, I want to go. You don't need me. I think I've contributed.
Yeah. Take your box with you. We don't need
my box.
It's your box. Nicole carried it up. You carry it down. I'm not carrying two boxes.
My land.
I'm kidding, girlfriend.
I didn't even want the box.
Yeah, I know, but you came and used it, so you have to carry it up. I've been running cruise. Yes. Woodchuck. What?
Oh, I do something.
These woodchuck holes have been homes to foxes. They've been here. This little strip has been here forever.
Your grade teacher is going to break her leg.
Well, the shift was really hard to make. I had been training picking crews since I was a teenager to pick, you know, 95% U.S. extra fancy fruit, and knew all about how the pack. I mean, we were grower packer shippers, right?
Yes.
You get this sort of mindset. I thought it would be. I mean, I'd spent all this time in England and France. I thought it would be, you know, it's fruit, right?
Yeah.
It was a nightmare trying to making this shift to acknowledging that all the components of value were different, that you wanted fruit that was grotesquely overripe by all your other standards, that you actually were better off letting the apples hit the ground, that actually you wanted the grass to come back in underneath the tree so it could lie on grass instead of keeping your nice, neat, weed-free strip. You know, so horticulturally you're doing these different things, that you actually wanted less growth on the trees, you wanted to drive the roots down. It just, the components of value are different. And we sell, you know, thousands and thousands of bushels of very high-priced fruit to cider makers all over the country. I mean, everywhere from Oregon to Virginia to Missoula to, I mean, we sell fruit all over the place, or juice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they pay our prices because the juice is killer good. But they're also paying our prices because we have these varieties. And we're kind of responsible for a lot of this as well. I mean, we've given away unbelievable mountains of grafting wood, of propagation material, mm-hmm, try mm-hmm. to encourage other people to do this. And they're finally doing it. Hundreds of thousands of trees going in the ground. Great. Would love to actually be proved wrong about this. I mean, I sort of hope I'm wrong about this. But I think the way these very good growers are treating these trees and are going to treat the fruit are not going to produce the best examples of the variety. I also think what I said about the patch of ground, there are things they can grow really well on their ground and things they can't grow. I can't grow wine sap for spit. I can't grow Fuji, you know? They can't grow McIntosh in Virginia, whatever, you know? So the idea that Dabinet will grow to a high standard everywhere, and you don't even need to subject it to any kind of a test. You just put it in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, shoot, I can grow Pinot Noir right here.
Yeah.
The wine's going to suck,
right.
But I can grow the grapes.
Right.
You know, there's no reason for me to grow mm-hmm. the grapes, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's all, this is going to be, I'm not saying that all the new juice is going to be terrible. All I'm saying is that there's going to be a big mind shift that folks are going to have to make in order to grow good cider fruit. That's going to be interesting.
I'd like to thank Steve Wood, Louisa Spencer, Nicole Bon, Ryan Bishop, and Wanda Loins of Farnham Hill. This has been an amazing chat, a real treasure trove of information. Make sure that if you haven't yet listened to part one of this chat, to go right to ciderchat.com and check it out. Stay tuned at the end of this chat for two fun clips that I chose especially for you to roll out of here. Regular listeners of this podcast have heard me speak about Patreon, but if you haven't heard about it, it's a website that helps podcasters and creators like myself provide an avenue for listeners to contribute towards Cider Chat and keep it thriving. Patrons set the rate of their contribution and in return receive special links to Cider Chat's YouTube channel, for instance. And this week, there's going to be a video of Farnham Hill's tasting. Last week, there's a video online now with Steve Wood blending cider. They also receive special transcripts of chats that I have recorded. And this week, I have launched officially the Cider Going Up campaign. This offer is exclusive for commercial cider makers who are all in and ready to help promote cider around the world via this podcast. Because I figure, who wants this podcast to really, think about it, just be celebrating one large cidery? I don't think that's really the way I want to roll, and I imagine you, commercial cider maker, you don't really want that to roll either. Wouldn't it be wonderful in the land of Ciderville that we have everyone accessible and passing out that knowledge to consumers around the world? So by joining in at the Cider Going Up level for commercial cider makers via my Patreon page, you will receive in return a whole lot of mention on this podcast, and the cidery of your choice will be listed on the Cider Going Up campaign page at ciderchat.com with a direct link to your website. This is a limited offer for the first 20 commercial cider makers who step forward and say, hell yeah, I want to promote cider. You can find the info via the ciderchat.com page called Cider Going Up. Well, Ciderville, I'm ready to roll out of here. Make sure you stay tuned for that little throw out by Louisa Spencer and Steve Wood. This is Rio Windcolor signing off for now. I look forward to seeing you so soon in Ciderville.
Cider's face. Hello.
You know how the cider industry's grown in sales. Mm-hmm. You know, 60%, 60%, 80%, 80%. It's down to 12 or something this year, this last year. Everybody's crying about it being down to 12, which is a growth rate that any other industry would go weak at the knees for.